Welcome to Positive Personal Power with hope, aspiration, and encouragement. Our goal is to build and enhance people's confidence and strength to handle life's challenges. Now, let me introduce you to your host, Nathaniel Skula.
Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode with Marvareen Cole.
Marvareen is an award-winning journalist, a broadcaster and an academic who is on the core team for the Sir Lenny Henry Centre for Media Diversity. So welcome, Marvareen.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be on the podcast.
Super, super. Well, I think it's really quite fun actually, because I've known you probably for it's got to be about 10 years, isn't it?
It is. And where's that decade gone? That's a bit scary, isn't it? But we met in the beer world, didn't we? In another world.
I know. It's extremely strange. I was kind of pivoting my career. And today we're going to talk about the career pivot, emotional well-being strategies, and how to navigate your career path, which right now is really tough for a lot of people. But back then, you know, you were in beer, you were broadcasting on TV, and I was selling beer for a few different breweries, and you know, we were into Twitter, right?
Yeah, we'd gone into Twitter because, I mean, Twitter was where it was at, and it still very much is now. So you were selling beer, I was a beer journalist, a beer writer. I think I just won my award with the Guild of British Beer Writers, I'd not long started freelancing as a journalist. I'd spent about 4 or 5 years at the BBC being a reporter, producer, and presenter in Birmingham, my hometown, with the local ITV, local BBC, and so on. I'd spent a couple of years at Sky News because they poached me from the BBC and said, come and work for us as a news anchor. So I did that. And then I think I came back to Brum for a bit, I was interested in the kind of links between the history around women potentially being the first ever producers of beer, you know, in thousands of years ago in Sumeria. And so, which was all really interesting to me. And I was like, no, I don't believe any of that. So being the journalist, I was investigating the history of beer, pitched an idea to BBC Inside Out in the East Midlands, and made a TV feature kind of looking at the history of beer and how women were the key to the future profitability of pubs, which is, for me, is really interesting. And my beer journey began, and I started blogging and writing and appearing on This Morning with Holly and Phil, getting them drunk on beer. At 12 in the afternoon, you know, it was brilliant. Had a lot of fun working in the beer world. I do less of that now, but of course, like you, I still drink beer.
Yeah, it's once you develop that passion for a nice beer, it's very, very difficult to not, because there's so many different flavors out there, right?
Absolutely, there are thousands upon thousands of beers. If you think about just British brewers alone, and most breweries will produce at least four core beers, right? So a golden ale, a bitter, an IPA, because who doesn't love an IPA, and a stout or a porter, at least four core beers that they brew regularly. And then you times that by the number of breweries you have in Britain, and then times that by the number of breweries, you know, in Europe and the world, and your beer journey could be never ending, which is beautiful, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit like your career journey, really. And, you know, it is. I mean, you're always, nowadays more than ever. I mean, I was listening to something the other day about how people, they actually have multiple different careers during their career, right? Like, and they learn skills all the way through. And I think, you know, that's something that I don't think you probably will realize how good you are at a multiple of things until you find that job that you or business that you start, which you really have to use those skills for, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, if I think back to myself when I was a little girl, so, you know, my mum and dad came over from Jamaica in the 50s. My dad was a builder. My mum was a nurse. And then, you know, my mum always loved watching the local news in the evening. So I think we'd watch Nick Owen on BBC News. And we'd also get the Birmingham Mail newspaper put through the door every night. And so she would read the paper and then hand it to me and go, have a look if you want. So, you know, my interest in news and current affairs started from that very young age. And I always felt, you know, drawn to TV, radio, broadcasting. I was always just watching TV and listening to radio. But then, you know, through school, I didn't feel brave enough to venture into the industry. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll try advertising. You know, I did a degree in business studies. And I thought, I'll try advertising. Mm-hmm. That didn't quite work out. Try marketing, did a couple of jobs, didn't work out. And I did various jobs through my 20s where I started a job, I didn't like it, I left. I started a job, got made redundant, you know, signed on. And in the end, I spent a lot of my 20s working as a secretary, like a PA, a personal assistant to top, you know, MDs and CEOs. And then I had like an epiphany when I was about, I think it was about 30. And I went, listen, this journalism thing that you thought about when you were a kid, I think you need to try it. So I went and did a postgraduate diploma in broadcast journalism at Birmingham City University, which is where I now work. So crazy full circle. And it was the best thing I ever did. Going back to uni, studying this postgrad, learning how to become a TV and radio reporter. And I don't want anyone to think for 1 minute it was just all an easy glide. I didn't have the money to pay for the fees for this course, right?
Right.
But I applied on a hunch. I thought, if I can get a place, then I know there are bursaries available, right? So you had to try and get a place to apply for a bursary. So I got the place. I was like, whew, one of the last 20 places for this postgrad. And then I think it was the local Heart FM station, the local BBC and the local ITV were all offering bursaries for students at this uni. So I applied for them all, just hoping, praying, had to go through like rigorous interviews for those bursaries. And in the end, each broadcaster offered me a bursary, which was like blew my mind.
Wow.
But that made me think, it made me realise, oh, maybe this is a good career move for me. Because if broadcasters have gone, yeah, we're going to pay your fees because we think you've got potential, it made me believe in myself, which is, you know, often half the battle for a lot of us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that really was the best thing I ever did, you know, so I kind of hustled and got my way into ITV and BBC and, you know, worked really hard. Some days I worked 7 days a week, took extra shifts, worked early mornings, late nights, just to kind of learn everything about the job and to learn in a deep fashion so that then I could be useful in all sorts of different ways. And, you know, I really honed my skills at the BBC in Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's very difficult, though, when you know, back to what you were just saying a little bit back, about your self-esteem and how sometimes you just need someone to perhaps believe in you to encourage you to take yourself seriously, like actually respect yourself, right?
Yeah. Do you know, me thinking about doing the postgrad came as a result of two periods of redundancy when I two jobs where I was a PA. I was in those respective jobs for a year and it was made redundant. And you know, you got 1 month salary to live on. And when you're young in your 20s and you're just about in your own flat, and you've got rent to pay and all the rest, it's really stressful. And yeah. And then I had times where I was out of work, signed on, you know, claimed benefit, you know, had my housing checks through and stuff like that. I was on you know, my electricity was on a meter at that time, and you know you'd watch the meter tick down and go into the emergency £5 before you could get some money to go to the shop and top it up. I've lived those times, right?
Yeah.
And so it felt like me studying the postgrad was my last ditch attempt, you know, that big leap of faith to try something new.
Yeah.
Try something that I felt I had potential in, but wasn't sure. And to get validated, you know, through those kind of broadcasters saying, yeah, we think you've got potential. Here's a bursary, was really like a huge change, a huge moment for me.
Yeah. It's really difficult. I remember once being out of work, being made redundant, and actually going to the job centre. And at the time, I think it was £35 a week that we were receiving. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll never forget. I rode my motorcycle about 20 minutes, 25 minutes to the job centre in Guildford. And I parked on the pavement, but it was a really wide pavement. And I made sure I parked against this wall. Yeah. And I came out and this traffic warden had given me a ticket.
No. What? Yeah, yeah.
And the ticket was like 50 quid. Yeah.
What?
And And it put everything into perspective. It was just like, oh no, it was just like a kick in the teeth. Right. But that wasn't the lowest point. I think that you think you're at your lowest point. Right. But if you haven't sort of been down to like your last can of baked beans and a loaf of bread with two slices left in the bag and maybe one tea bag and no milk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think when that arrives, you can only go upwards from there. Right.
Totally. I totally appreciate what you're saying. That definitely would have been one of my lowest points, you know, the running down the emergency £5 on the Leckie.
Yep.
And then going, right, I just need to go and get £5 to get it back to zero.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when I'm feeling, you know, low or struggling, I think back to times like that. And I always have gratitude. And my husband and I have gratitude because, you know, he's had tough times as well. And,
yeah,
you know, he had a hideous motorbike accident, 25 years ago. And he always remembers, you know, I'm so grateful for surviving that, right? So we do often go, oh, aren't we just, we're doing all right. Are we doing all right? Yeah, we're doing all right. Okay, just let's keep on going up. Yeah, because life deals you some blows sometimes, and it's how you pull yourself out of it that is the real key to a happy future.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, before this episode, I sent you a message on LinkedIn saying we're going to talk about Rocky, right? And Rocky, the story about Sylvester Stallone is that he actually sold his dog for $25 US. To this guy outside the liquor store, right? So serious, before he actually did Rocky One, he was trying to sell the script. And every time he'd go and in New York and he would go to these producers and he'd say, look, I've got this movie. I want to be in it. And they would look at him and go, what do you mean you want to be in it? Like, you can't even talk properly and stuff like this, right? And one of them offered him, I think, $250,000 for his script, but he wasn't allowed to be in the movie. And he turned around, he said, no, I'm not going to do that. So eventually settled for being selling this for $35,000 and being in the movie. And they took a punt on him. And basically, then he went back to the liquor store. It was the first thing he did. He went back to the liquor store 3 days in a row and he waited for this guy with his dog. And he actually managed to buy the dog back from the guy. But the guy said, I want to be in your movie and I want $15,000 for the dog. Right. But I was just listening to this story just before you came on to talk to me. And in fact, I think he actually slept in a bus station for 3 weeks.
No.
And really, we're really lucky in England. I mean, yes, there are homeless people, but if you really want to get off the streets, I think you probably can, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think so too. I remember watching, the BBC have done a lot of incredible documentaries on BBC Three on iPlayer about, speaking day in, day out, week in, week out to homeless people. And I think there's a series of Women on the Streets, which is really interesting. Looking at, talking to homeless people about why they're there and if they want to get off the streets and how, you know, they're being helped or not. It's all relative, isn't it? It's where you perceive the help to be, and how some kind of coped going into shelters and then not coping with the the regime and the regulations around living in a shelter and then being kicked out again. And, you know, it was all just so, so complex, isn't it? The reasons why people are homeless is so, so complex. But ultimately, there are always those stories of people who have battled to get clean and get into accommodation and get a job and turn themselves around.
I think it just depends on kind of the individual, right, and what they take away from it. Yeah, like I'm super grateful to like have a roof over my head and like to be able to eat, right? Like, and I think there are different levels, aren't there, of kind of pain that you sort of have to go through to learn lessons, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, when I think about, you'd laugh at the way that my husband and I are. We're always grateful and I'll go, oh, we've made it to our like dream house. And that in itself was a struggle because, you know, we had, as you do, you have first world problems, of course. We had credit card debts and all the rest of it. And we had to pay those down to get the mortgage. And then we only had a certain mortgage because, you know, the times in my 20s when I had been made redundant and was, you know, on benefits and what have you, I ruined my credit rating. Mm-hmm. So the ability to get a mortgage was an issue. And then, you know, I'd say to my husband, we've got this house, it's great. And he said, yeah, we've done really well. We've paid our debts off. And I said, but we wouldn't have been able to even be here without you having bought that flat, you know, to have some equity to pay down to a mortgage. And he said, yeah, but think about where that equity came from. Because he was able to buy the flat from the insurance money he got because of the hideous motorbike accident. And you're like, whoa, then you kind of start thinking, God, there's a lot of weird karma going on here. This terrible thing happened, but out of that something, you know, good or better can come. Really, really strange how the world works.
Yeah.
I am a firm believer, though, in a lot of the philosophy that inspirational guys like Robert Holden and Michael O'Neill talk about, in that everything that we might look for outside of ourselves, you know, happiness, joy, resilience, you know, is actually within us already innately. I'm a strong believer in that, you know, and that's one of the things that has kept me going and kind of transformed my life and how I deal with things. Like in the last year, I listened to a lot of Robert Holden. Mm-hmm. I listened to a lot of Michael O'Neill in terms of podcasts and books and shows.
Wow. So with emotional well-being strategies, right, there are so many different ways that you can manage your emotions. But before you learn to manage your emotions, you need to understand what they are, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to almost self-diagnose. I think it's harder if you can't self-diagnose. In the same way we know when we've eaten something and it's not agreed with us, or we kind of sense why, oh, my knee's absolutely killing me today, and that's probably because I did half an hour of a crazy Joe Wicks this morning. Do you know what I mean? You know why something's not feeling right.
Yeah.
And then when you feel something in your body that is, that's weird, I can't quite pinpoint it, then you almost know that, maybe I should go to the doctors about this, right? So the same way we do that kind of self-diagnosis around our body, I think it's, you know, it would help everyone to try and do that self-diagnosis around our emotions, but also recognize where our feelings coming from. Where our feelings, where our emotions are coming from. We're always experiencing our feelings. So, you know, like when we're worried about something that's ahead, it's kind of, we're fixating on something that's ahead, but that does not make any sense because we can't predict the future, you know. So why would you get yourself completely wound up about something that you know an imagined future? So the sooner we recognize, you know, those sorts of feelings, the sooner we can go, well, that's kind of silly, right? So snap back to the present and handle each minute, each hour, each day as it comes. That's how I handle things. That's how I handle things now. I recognize where my feelings are coming from, what's making me sad, what's making me angry, and kind of rationalize it and go, well, particularly when there's nothing I can do about a situation, I just tell myself there's no point in expending the energy, expending the negativity, winding yourself up about something that you have absolutely no control over. I've just been able to do that. And that is through the help of, like I say, listen to Robert Holden, listen to Michael O'Neill. I would recommend all of those works to anybody who kind of struggles with emotions and you know, well-being.
Yeah, I've been doing Tai Chi like nearly 25 years, right? So for me, I'm very aware of my emotions, but I'm also aware of how to kind of balance them. And exercise, diet, water, and other things play a big part in that. But like right now, it's super difficult right now because we're all stuck indoors. Many people can't even go out for any exercise without fear of bumping into someone and whatever, right? So it is really, really tough. But I think I agree. I think day by day, just kind of break it down, right? And you know, you just got to try and do your best. I mean, if you can't change something right now, then perhaps, you know, if you're not in work or you've been stuck at home and you can't do your regular job, then think about some skills that you'd like to learn, something that you really enjoy. You know, look into it and study, and before you know it, you can actually be very good at something. Like, I mean, I didn't know anything about podcasting like 5 years ago, and I just learned how to edit from a friend of mine told me how to edit, and I launched a podcast and launched another one, and then the world's largest ebook producer asked me to do some expert talks for them, and I produced around 100 talks for those guys, and yeah, so you know, you don't know where things are going to lead, but I think you need to listen to your intuition, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, all the examples you've given of how you have schooled yourself are so relevant now. We've got so much that is available online, and yes, I fully appreciate. I'm not sitting here going, "Haha, my situation's great." You know, there are loads of people, like you said, in tower blocks who can't. You know, the parks closed or whatever, you know, they might have to walk how many floors to get downstairs or whatever to get fresh air. I appreciate that a lot of people for whom this lockdown is going to be absolutely awful. It is awful. And I suppose the only suggestion, the only thing I can think of, flipping back to the situation where I was, you know, in a pokey little flat, not that nice, for 4 years, right? Is do what you can, try and stay calm about the situation and have hope that things will change, but also try and plan if you can as to how you want to change your future, because I do believe that we are the masters of our own fate, of our own destiny. Yeah. And like you were saying, you know, I think YouTube is the biggest encyclopedia in the world. There are so many helpful people showing you how to set up a podcast, how to use this, how to do that, how to edit this. But then also there are organizations who are now throwing open, you know, courses that were previously on paywalls, right? Free. So Coursera, I think, you know, or cheaper like Udemy, Open University's got a whole load of free courses. FutureLearn, there are all these sorts of places online, and I'm sure like load more that I haven't even mentioned that people will know about. Well, you can log on, spend hours. Boy, have we got hours now! If you're not a key worker, we've got time. You know, if you're furloughed, you've got time, right? And school yourself on a new topic, a new hobby, to try and transform your life in readiness for when we do come out of however long this cycle is of us being locked down. That is what I would suggest to anyone and everyone, to give yourself hope. Give yourself hope. Don't succumb to the hopelessness if you can. I know I always qualify it by saying, I'm not deliberately sounding flippant or glib, but I think you know, holding on to some hope for a better future for yourself is really important.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's about having faith, right? I mean, like, whatever your belief system is, like, you've got to have faith that things are going to get better. It's a bit like walking through a tunnel, yeah? At the beginning of the tunnel, everything's black, and you can't even see the white dot at the end, at the other end. But when you get to daylight out the other side, you start seeing more and more of your path. And that's a bit like navigating your career path, right? Which I think we should just, appreciate that people like yourself, people like Lenny Henry, and people from all sorts of races sexual orientation and, you know, things like this, they found it very, very hard in life, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's because obviously, you know, a lot of our institutions, a lot of our organisations have always been led by and managed by traditionally white male, privately educated majority. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's not me spouting off the top of my head. You only have to look at Sutton Trust's, you know, kind of detailed research around the elite professions in the world, you know, which is basically a lot. Yeah. A lot of professions and a lot of industries and institutions. And so, you know, when that's been kind of how it has been for centuries or, you know, kind of decades, then as our population changes and as the UK changes with people from different countries and different ethnicities and different faiths migrating and settling here and feeling they're British they are British when they're born here. You can understand when people feel like, hang on a minute, so we're not represented in these circles. We're here, we're living here, we contribute to society, we're paying taxes, all the rest of it. We feel British, yet we're not part of decision-making. We're not represented in it very well in many areas. Then you can appreciate what people are feeling. Hang on a minute, this doesn't feel right. We need to try and effect some change so that, you know, all of those institutions that we know of feel more representative, are more representative of how Britain is today. You know, so Lenny Henry's focus, of course, is television, because, you know, he made it on TV at the age of 16, winning New Faces in front of, what was it, upwards of 16 million people. So that's his domain. It always has been. And, you know, he's excelled at it, of course. He's also excelled at academia, by the way, as an aside, not long getting a PhD. But so the aim for the Lenny Henry Centre for Media Diversity at my university, which is Birmingham City University, is about, you know, trying to increase diversity and inclusion in the media, with an aim of kind of trying to improve policy decisions. And I know some people will be like, why does that matter? Why does any of that matter? Why do we need to see more Black, Asian, ethnic minority people on TV? Because representation really does matter, you know. We can't kind of keep things as they are. There needs to be a shift, a more concerted shift towards a fairer representation. And the data, you know, from Ofcom around media diversity is very clear. You know, a lower proportion of ethnic minority employees in senior management positions, you know, making decisions on what programs we see, we don't see, the people we see on TV or on the radio, the people behind the camera, behind the microphone, very few ethnic minorities involved in those decisions. And the same when it comes to news, the news and current affairs we see. Again, it's an extremely elite profession, journalism. So, you know, you've really got to, of course, in any profession, you've got to just fight hard to kind of get through. But it seems that the playing field is not level. And hopefully, you know, with the work that we're doing at the centre, we'll hope to level that playing field. You know, we're going to be analysing diversity statistics, examining, you know, where there might be deficits in the figures, but also analyse some of the broadcasts or the announcements made by broadcasters about what they're doing around diversity and just kind of take the temperature of the industry.
Mm. That's very interesting. So, excuse me, I've just got a cough. So, when navigating your career path, right, would you just look at an industry you want to go into and actually take a look at some of the real leaders in that industry and say, well, actually, I could be there. I could potentially be there in 5 years, 10 years time, and or next month or next year. But like, would you sort of start there and then try to navigate the skills that you need to actually get to that place?
Yeah, I definitely would. But I'd also come from a point of, as well as identifying where you think you might want to be, make that decision based on a passion, because there's no point in pursuing a career that you don't feel passionate about. You know, why sit and go, yeah, I want to be an accountant, when you're kind of, you know, you weren't very good with maths, and you know, you're thinking, yeah, it's going to make me a lot of money, but you haven't got the drive for it. I think absolutely you've got to have a drive for a particular career. These days there's so much information out there about how to get into different careers. Lots of people volunteering their own stories of their own journey. Lots of very transparent information about the qualifications you need to get there. Way more so than, you know, when I was thinking about broadcast journalism as a career, you know, coming on nearly 20 years ago, there's way more information now.
Oh yeah. And there's masses.
There's loads. And so, yeah, do the research. But also, you know, every industry is very much built on around networking as well. And there seems to be in some professions, there is in journalism kind of a unwritten rule of you've got to work your way up, which I think is fair, you know, which makes sense, particularly if you want to get to a senior position. You can't jump into a senior position of an organization without understanding how the cogs work, you know, which bits turn which bits and who's responsible for what. I think it'd be very difficult for anybody to do that unless you know a profession. Some people might disagree. But you need to school yourself on industry, you know, who are the main players, what sort of qualifications you need, also what sort of aptitudes and behaviours you need. You know, what sort of person do you need to be? What sort of skills and qualities do you need to have? You know, be a good listener. Be a good team player, be able to back down, you know, if you're trying to have an argument or a discussion and it's not working, to be able to compromise, see other people's point of view, you know, all those sorts of things. It's a combination of the two, but yeah, spy what you want to do, and then just work hard on schooling yourself about as much of the industry as you can, and ultimately, you know, getting the right qualifications to get in. And to thrive and to grow.
I think also finding mentors as well is superb. I mean I've learned so many amazing things from people that just want to teach. I mean, they love just helping people to get somewhere, really.
It's really, you know, mentors is really interesting. I have never had an industry mentor, but I have mentored hundreds of people.
So it
feels weird. I've never had a mentor, but then I and I suppose that's why I have become a mentor, in that, and that people have come to me and said, I've seen you're doing this. I've seen you, you know, you've been an anchor and now you're an academic. Can I talk to you about how I can, you know, move on in my career? And, you know, I've always loved doing that and continue to do that. So, yeah, I agree. Having a mentor is super important. But please don't expect that mentor to just hand you everything on a plate and go, here's my contact to do this. Here's my contact to do that. It's about, you know, discussing what you think you've got to offer, and that person helping you kind of shape your future.
Yeah. I agree completely. And it hurts because you're going to grow, because they're going to point you in the right direction. Maybe you can work on some projects and stuff together with them as well, depending on what business you're in. And it's painful, you know. It took me years to learn certain skills, and now those skills are coming together now, you know. But
that's part of the learning journey, isn't it?
Yeah. If it doesn't hurt, then generally you're probably not learning anything.
No pain, no gain.
Well, you've been most generous with your time. I can't thank you enough. And it's been super talking with you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Positive Personal Power. Do subscribe via your favorite podcasting app and please leave us a 5-star review. Or sign up on our website, positivepersonalpower.net, for weekly emails and updates, and do share our episodes with your friends and on social media. Feel free to reach out anytime.